It's 2:45 Central Time. This is the Afternoon Magazine. My name is Celeste Quinn. My guest in this portion of the program is a record-breaking athlete, horseman, and doctor. But chances are you know this man for his voice. His name is Ronan Tynan. He's one of the Irish tenors. Let's listen to him sing from the tenor CD Ellis Island, How Are Things in Glacamora? Irish tenor Ronan Tynan. Now to his resume, he can add writer. He's the author of a memoir, Halfway Home, My Life Till Now. He joins us this afternoon here on the Afternoon Magazine. Good afternoon.
Hello, Celeste. How are you?
I'm fine, and you?
Not too bad, thank you.
Well, good. You may be only halfway through life, but yours has certainly been a full life.
Well, I suppose I'm packing a fair bit into it. I believe you have to live every day as if it's your last.
Yeah.
So you put everything you can into a day and make it so special.
Yeah. Well, your life is full despite some adversity that came with life itself.
Yeah, I suppose you could say that. Yeah, I think life is what you make it, and I was very blessed to be born into a great family.
Mm-hmm.
And I think with the way they brought me up and gave me principles and values, I never looked at life as dealing me a rough hand. I always felt that I've been dealt a tremendous hand, and whatever I lost in the roundabout, I really gained in the swing.
Yeah. What do you remember most fondly about growing up with your brother and sister, your mom and dad on a farm?
Well, I had an amazing relationship with my family, but I had a very special bond with my father. And I suppose one thing that actually comes really to mind, seeing as we're talking about and are in the Christmas season, I remember Mom and Dad used to always have little boxes for us, so that when Christmas Day would come, we would get up in the morning as children and run down, and each box had our name on it, and in the box was everything and anything. And you always, I suppose at that time, children didn't ask for computers and didn't know what a computer was. And cowboys and Indian sets and snakes and ladders and a thing called a spirograph. All these things were big then. And we used to play an awful lot of games, and we used to all get a lot of books.
Mm.
And at that age, I remember Enid Blyton was a big fondness among the three of us. And, I loved the Christmas period. I loved the Christmas dinner because we all each had a set of crackers, and we'd pull them with our parents. And then we'd sing.
Yeah, did you put
Yeah. That memory was, is quite fresh in my mind.
Yeah. I can almost see you sitting around the table with those funny hats on. And
Well, that's exactly. And my mother used to cook this massive turkey. and dad would cut it. Everybody seemed to have a job that used to work. I mean, I used to set the table. Fiona used to make stuffing and stuff like that. It was amazing. It was just one of these families that kind of seemed to all just work. Mm-hmm. And the plum pudding was great because what she used to do was she used to pour brandy over it and set it on fire. And we used to be completely stunned by it, you know. And there was a lot of laughing going on. Yeah, you know, I mean, people... It was, we're a family of three, and it was a very happy day. And it went through the whole evening, and then we used to sit in the evening then, and Dad would have a huge fire on. Mm. And we'd either watch TV, because there was always a kind of a TV special on that night, or else actually what would happen is that people would come in, you know, not particularly relatives, but neighbours. And they tell stories, and it was fantastic.
Mm. What did you sing around the table before? Was it before dinner or after?
Oh, it was always after.
Uh-huh. And what did you sing?
Some people, my mom and dad weren't big drinkers at all, but on that day they used to have a glass of wine and sherry, and we used to sing all the Christmas favorites, all the the Silent Nights, the Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. We used to sing then some, Irish songs. Galway Bay, Danny Boy. We used to sing all those ones that, and everybody knew. My mother was tone deaf. She couldn't sing a note. But Dad was the singer, and I suppose I followed his footsteps.
Yeah.
Tom can't sing a note either. He's as tone deaf as anybody you could hear singing. And Fiona had a beautiful voice. So what we used to do was Fiona and I used to sing a little duet for them. It was called In the Deep Woods Where the Cuckoo Sings. It was an Irish song.
Oh.
And Dad loved it. And we used to sing then the Connemara Cradle Lullaby. So these were songs that we used to sing.
Yeah. And it was your dad who kind of encouraged you in your music, didn't he?
Yeah. The funny thing, the amazing thing about it, Celeste, is while Mom was the one with the education...
Mm-hmm.
And wanted so much for each one of us to learn the piano, and we all started. And Tom learned it like math. He used to where they'd have C D E F G 1 2 3 4 5. He played by numbers. Fiona was the one that took it to the diploma stage, and I kind of started with it. And I always had different ideas as to what the teacher had. I wanted to be playing Strauss, and I didn't want to start where the beginner should start. And Dad, on the other hand, we used to sing an awful lot, and he would encourage me to sing the whole time.
Mm.
So that's really, I mean, both of them had huge contributions into the singing aspect. However, I never had a singing lesson until I was 33.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it is. It's quite a distance to go without a singing lesson.
When did you decide that you'd like to become a doctor?
Well, and you see, the funny thing is, the child at Celeste, I used to always dream. I had dreams. The funny thing is, everything I dreamed kind of became a reality, if you know what I'm saying. I mean, I used to race with myself in the fields. I used to sing all the time to all the animals and to the birds and things like that. But I always felt that I was going to be a doctor as a child. I mean, I always envisioned it. And, I can't give the cliche, I wanted to help people. Of course, that's a formidable understanding that's why people want to do medicine. But I had a feeling that that's where I was going to be. I was going to give something back to the public. And I wanted to do it in a healing way.
Hmm. And your specialty, orthopedic sports injuries?
Yeah, I did. In medicine in Ireland, you do 6 years. It's a bit. It's different to the U.S., where you do your your first degree, and then you do your 4 years of medicine. Well, in Ireland, you do 6 years. You go straight from, shall we say, high school. But I first did a degree in sports science and physical education, and then went in and was involved with design. I went for to work with a company for designing prostheses, and then went and did medicine.
Yeah. Now, all the way, all this time, all during this time, of course, music is still very important to you. And it was interesting to read in the book that there's in Halfway Home, there was you had a sense of conflict between the two ways of living, and there came a time when you, in medical school, you'd performed a part of a concert, or you performed a concert for professors and fellow students, I imagine, and a professor comes up to you afterwards and, you know, says thank you, but then he also suggests that maybe you should spend more time on your medical studies and forget the singing.
Yeah, the funny thing is, and I remember that very vividly, and that was in the, basically in the Christmas period just before I would have sat my finals. And I had been asked to do one of these medical conferences, and I remember the guy's name was Napoleon Keeley. He's a tremendous man. And he said to me, while it's always lovely being able to do this, he says, you have to be careful, he says, because in 4 more months, he says, you could well be before me, he said, doing your final medical exam. He said, so he said, you know, he said, put the priorities into position. And I think, Celeste, and I did, I mean, it wasn't a difficult thing to do, but, I mean, if something is inside you, and it's deep-rooted, it finds its way to the surface. And I couldn't quell the fact that I wanted to sing, and mm-hmm. I couldn't quell the fact that I wanted my medical studies. But I knew that at somewhere down the line, I was going to have to make a choice. And he was, I mean, as a result of that, what he did was every Friday evening he used to bring me up to his hospital. And I used to examine patients in front of him, you know, and he was tremendous. And we got on tremendously well, and he did say to me, you know, he said it's definitely one thing you can do. You can balance your life, he said, very well with both singing and medicine. You know, I had proved to him that I was no less dedicated as a doctor as I was in love with my singing.
Hmm. So what's the story behind the tenors, the Irish tenors? How did you come together?
The Irish tenors came together in 1998. A very good friend of mine, actually, who was responsible, basically, for the first talent competition I won in Guildford, Bill Hughes, rang me and said to me, would I be interested in doing this project called the Irish Tenors? And I've never said no to anything like that. So I said, yeah, Bill, it sounds fantastic. He said, it's only a thought, he said, at the present moment, but he said, it could very easily become a reality. So, and then he said to me, about 4 months later, he said, it's becoming more of a major thought. And he asked me to recommend other tenors. And I knew Finbar, and he had said to me that Finbar, unfortunately, was tied up with Sony, so he couldn't be released. And I had heard Anthony, and I had said to Bill, I said, there's a young guy, I said, I heard, and I said, he's terrific. And so he went and auditioned Anthony. And at that time, he was also very interested in looking at Frank Patterson. But Frank was so tremendously successful that he felt in his career, you know, it was late in coming, and he had already had a very, very established career. And I think at the same time, PBS were looking at their project, and they had found John McDermott. So it worked kind of to put the three of us together. That's how it happened.
Yeah, well, it came together beautifully.
It truly did.
Yeah. We're almost out of time, I'm so sorry to say. But I want you to tell us just a little bit, if you would, about this solo recording that you've done now.
Well, this is interesting. In actual Celeste, it's not actually done yet. But it is.
It's in the works.
It is certainly in the works. Yeah, it's like a lot of things, Celeste. You know, it has to go through the works. The Sony are re-releasing my own album, My Life Belongs to You, into America, And they, I asked them at the time, I said, I would love to put God Bless America on it as an a cappella, and they agreed, and so that is on it. And then the new, the kind of the project that's in the works is being planned for a PBS special as well.
Okay.
And it's going to be kind of my whole life through song.
Terrific.
So I hope, well, I hope people enjoy it. Been lovely talking to you.
Lovely talking to you as well. Merry Christmas.
Many happy returns and have a great one.
Roland Tynan has been our guest in this portion of the Afternoon Magazine. His memoir, Halfway Home, My Life Till Now.